Lawrence!
Paul Goody!
Hey! So,
how's it going?
Good. To my left, my child is watching The Wizard of Oz.
A classic.
While listening to Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
Ah, another classic. Yes.
Yes, and when I said, oh, are you going to be listening to Dark Side of the Moon, when she was saying she was going to watch Wizard of Oz, she said, oh, did I already tell you about that?
Oh, really?
Like, that was a thing that the kids are doing now that I wouldn't know. Anyway, so I'm a little bit darker, light-wise, because I don't want to cause a glare on the screen with my light.
Much like,
I think it's okay, though. You can.
My pasty face just causes a glare everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to have my pasty face cause. So you can still see me all right, though, right? Yeah. It's okay. Okay.
Yeah, I can see you. Sadly.
So, note. Hey. Noticeably on time today.
Yeah.
But I want to tell you something. That is absolutely true. You remember how I was bragging about putting the podcast reminder in my phone?
Yes.
The reminder would have told me that I had the podcast on the 19th. It was set on Saturday. even though our makeup day was on Friday. So,
yeah.
All sorts of stuff. Our makeup day. Ben and Paul... I don't think I'm an autumn. It doesn't seem like it fits. As you can see, the beard is coming back. It's doing pretty well.
Did it leave?
I took it off for a little bit. Let me see if I can find the reason that I have been trying to get my beard back. I guess it's not here. Oh, here it is.
It's a lovely image.
We got Legos for our family a while back, and that's me. Oh, yeah. And so I need to get back to my Lego form.
I see.
To feel better about how things are working. So anyway, Ben, I want to point out that I didn't realize the people that did the Lego movie.
Yes.
They also did Little Big Planet, the video game. Did you know that?
No, but I don't really.
It's pretty interesting.
Follow who creates video games.
And I was also saddened that they didn't do Solo. I think Solo would have been a wonderful movie if they had.
Solo. They started Han Solo movie.
Yeah, they started. And the idea was that the old guard thought that it was too weird.
And then Ron Howard took it over.
That's why we got kind of a more traditional, I don't want to say necessarily boring, but I didn't like Solo as much as I could have.
Solo? Yeah, no, it was fine. I mean, I think the... when I was talking to the nerds about it when it came out on the Perfect Bound podcast, I think the overwhelming consensus was that it wasn't a bad movie. It was just unnecessary. Like,
yes,
we don't need Han Solo's backstory.
It could have been. This is the thing, and I honestly think this is probably where they were going with it, just because it's where I would have gone with it. That it needed to be Smokey and the Bandit or Cannonball Run or something like like over the top crazy chase movie rather than heist movie.
Yeah, I would have loved a Jerry Reed style song.
Coruscant and Down was a smuggler.
Yeah.
You know, bootlegger. Bootlegger.
Bootlegger. Not a bootlicker.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Han Solo, A Cab. No, it's not.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Something about a police officer being too drunk to drive his squad car. Should I call you A Cab? Hey, what'd you say to me? Antifa's not a thing, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, but it's weird. Now it is. It now, just like Bernie Bros, Ben, if you use the word long enough, you can manifest something into existence.
I saw this. Apparently, there's a group out there that measures how many times news stories talk about or news channels talk about news stories. And apparently, before the midterm election, right-wing media was talking about the crime problem in America. Crime is everywhere. Yes. We have an epidemic of crime. Don't go to the big cities because crime is happening. And then after the midterms, it, like, halved. The crime reporting halved. So maybe it's not as big of a problem as they make it out to be for middle America.
Jennifer found a clip online of, like, see, look how horrible things are in Seattle.
Yeah, I love those.
And it was third. And it's like, well, of course. Those aren't all homeless people. Those are people waiting for buses.
Right. Yeah, there's
but
a
if
thing.
If you're shooting away from the street and you're just walking, you think that there are just people hanging out on the street all day, which they are, but they're waiting for buses.
There are some, but there's also there was a piece of video footage that I saw that was purported to be, oh, it's terrible. People are riding the light rail and doing drugs and sleep and passing out on the light rail, and they show it's dark, right? And a train is like at a stop, and you see people, they're sleeping in their chairs, probably because they're on their way to work or on their way home because it's dark.
You gotta think that a lot of these folks don't take public transportation in general.
Well,
the people are sleeping all the time.
I've slept on buses.
Now, I will say that when I lived in Seattle, when I was at the Virginian, this person who was a friend of one of my neighbors came by and said that he and his girlfriend were waiting for my neighbor to get back, and could I let them hang out in my apartment while he was waiting? And obviously,
you said yes.
Yes, of course I did. I was a country boy in the big city. Of course, yeah, sure. And then 5 hours later, turns out my neighbor still isn't home. May not be home for, a while. And I just realized that these are now just basically two strangers who are nodding off in my apartment, because that's exactly, once I described it, I think you were there even. It might have even been, hey Jennifer.
What?
It might have even been Jennifer Pratt. When we first met, like early, and I was giving, this is like before Jennifer and I were dating, before we even really knew each other, I was talking about this weird experience where these two people who said that they were waiting for my neighbor came into my apartment, and then they just sat down on the floor and fell asleep. And you were like, yeah, they were nodding off. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And you're like, okay.
Alright.
Yeah, that was a true story. One of Jennifer and I's first reactions, possibly.
That's pretty funny. I don't know. I think if I were a simple country bumpkin with an apartment in the big city.
Hey, I didn't say bumpkin, Ben.
I don't think I'd let people into my apartment. I just got a email.
I'm
from,
friendly. That's the
I
problem.
I got an email from my apartment complex just
I'm
today.
Not that friendly. Sorry. Go ahead. An email from your
what
apartment
were you saying about being friendly?
I said, oh, wait, maybe I'm not that friendly. I thought about it for a little bit, and I was like, I'm polite not necessarily friendly.
Apparently, somebody was snooping around our somebody suspicious was snooping around our apartment building, and they're like, "Don't let anybody in who doesn't have a key fob." But there's the thing is, I live in a very diverse neighborhood, in a building that is very diverse, and oftentimes at certain times of the day, people will get to the front door at the same time. I am not the kind of person to like turn around to the person of color who's walking in the door behind me saying, "I can't let you in unless you prove you live here."
What I do, and this is real, not just people of color, anyone. This is something that I wouldn't say notorious for, but again, this is something that you probably noticed at one point in time. If I got to the door at the same time as somebody else, I would turn and go somewhere. I would like walk and get coffee, do something else, and then come back. Because I couldn't deal with the social interaction part of that.
I do that same thing. Sadly, in this building I live in currently, there is only one way in. I only have keys to the front door. Now I have a parking garage clicker, but I don't keep it with me. I only take it out of my apartment if I'm driving my car. So I do that exact same thing. If I see somebody like hanging out by the front door, like waiting to be buzzed in or something, I will just keep on walking. I'll walk about another block and then I'll come back.
Yeah. So the other thing is, of course, you mentioned parking. When I was looking at I'll tell you something after the podcast is over again.
Ooh, more secrets.
Yeah, but when I was looking for possible places to live if I had to move, one of the things that I think I even mentioned this on the podcast, I was looking and I was like, well, that's weird. They're showing you that they have a parking space at this apartment, and that's kind of cool. But and this apartment is within my price range. But why is it just a picture of a parking space? Why don't you show me the inside of the? Oh no! Oh no! Oh boy! Yeah.
$750 for a parking spot or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Which, by the way, I assume that I couldn't just park a, you know, trailer there or whatever, and then
right,
or sit in a lawn chair in the parking spot.
Well, they didn't have any hookups.
But Andy, friend of the podcast, Andy, showed me two really interesting things that they have at the library. I can't remember what the other one was. There were two things, but one of them was nap pods.
Okay.
That you have at the library now in the Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville Library. Nap pods, like you might find in Japan or whatever, where you could just go to sleep in the library. Yeah.
I mean,
and then there was something else. I forgot what it was.
Sorry.
We had those at the large internet real estate company I worked at.
Mm.
They had nap rooms. So you could like go to a room and it was private, and it wasn't a pod. It was a whole like, you know, tiny office that probably had like a bed or something.
I mean, that's something. If I were
it's done. Okay.
Like there was a what? Wait, Betty.
Yeah, it's done.
Are you just saying the Dark Side of the Moon is over?
Yeah, and it didn't reset itself, so like
you gotta restart it.
So like it's all off. It'll be off.
So what did you think? Did you find some synchronicities?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
But yeah, I didn't know that Dark Side of the Moon and The Wizard of Oz weren't the same length. That's crazy.
Oh, no, yeah. The movie is much longer.
Yeah.
But if you restart it, there will still be some things that line up at the end of the movie.
I think I might have told you this already. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
At the very end, when Dorothy wakes up and everybody's crowded around her, I believe that happens when you hear the lyric, "Calls the faithful to their knees."
Oh.
I went through. I made a whole list of these things like 20 years ago. I really got into it.
So here's something that I think you and I have probably talked about, maybe even talked about in the podcast before. What number has this been?
351.
Yeah, we're gonna mention some other things that we've already.
You could probably make a whole podcast, or probably a whole couple podcasts, just based on the stuff that we've repeated.
Yeah. So the basic thing is that, and see what changes. You know,
see if we're telling the truth.
So, Andy and I used to rent a house here in Evansville, where I live now. I think I might have mentioned that before I moved to Seattle. And we were getting into a discussion about that Pink Floyd thing, and I made the statement that you could take any two things, any audio and any video, and play them at the same time. Because of the way that the human brain looks for patterns, you would find things that sync up. And totally. Randomly, we chose Koyaanisqatsi by Philip Glass, the soundtrack to that movie, and the Teletubbies. And if you play them both at the same time, and I honestly think it doesn't matter which episode you play, but give it a shot. Try it sometime. Play that and watch the Teletubbies. And the synchronicity there is kind of amazing.
I remember doing that. Like I said, 20 years ago, I went and I bought a copy of Wizard of Oz on DVD specifically for this purpose, and just sat and wrote down. Loud ass motorcycle outside. Sat and wrote down all the pieces of synchronicity that I found, and then I just picked two other random albums, another random album and a random movie, and I did the same thing, and I found some things.
Do you remember what the two are?
I don't. I wrote it down somewhere. It's trapped inside a Word doc in my laptop that it contains all the words to my old blogs. Yeah, I'll check it out. I think
that'd be so cool. But the thing that hey, it's time for AIR report, Ben. I read a thing. Yesterday. Was it yesterday or was it the day before? I read a thing this week, and it was in the Texas Law Review. It was an article. It was written by a couple of guys who were lawyers about something called fair learning. And they were talking about it in context with machine learning, which is, kind of where the AIR thing goes. But they also talk about how it works for humans as well. And the concept is this. Copyright is meant to protect a piece of work, the composition and the lighting and all that kind of stuff, or the clever prose, that kind of the artistry behind the copyright material.
Right.
What they're arguing is if all you're taking is facts from these things, an example being, I have a data set that I'm Google, let's say. I'm sorry to break it to you here, Ben, but no. I'm a company, Google. I'm getting copies of photos of stop signs, right? And you remember doing this. Hey, which of these are stop signs, human beings? Let us know.
Oh, yeah. That's an annoying CAPTCHA thing.
Yeah, but they had to get those stop signs from somewhere, right? And so the idea is that where they're actually getting those stop signs are from scraping the images that they collect for Google image search, right? A lot of those images are under copyright. And so technically, they're using this copywritten material for their research. So does the person who took the picture of the stop sign get compensated for taking that picture? Should they? Right? That's the question. A lot of people think yes. Mostly people who take pictures. But what these law professors are suggesting, professors maybe just lawyers, but what they're suggesting is that the purpose for collecting those pictures is not to you know, put on a wall or to admire the way the stop sign. It's to teach a self-driving car what a stop sign looks like. And the suggestion that they had was, if you exclude all the copywritten images, that's the difference, perhaps, of your self-driving car recognizing a stop sign when it's dark and raining versus, you know, when it's bright and sunny, for example, that sort of thing. And there's a quote that the guy from Office Hours did, Midjourney, Office Hours. Hey, guys, is there like a burning plastic or rubber thing happening?
No, you're just having anybody? A stroke.
It might be. So I'm gonna just hang out here.
Your laptop getting annoyed that you're still talking about AI art.
Okay, yeah, exactly. It's a warning signal. So that's the basic idea is that they say if the end result isn't, you know, this, then you should be able to do it. Fair learning. You should be able to learn from stuff. And another example they gave was scientists who were doing a study using tables and charts that were from another study in their study, right? The idea being that, you know, they don't want the table because it's pretty. They want the table because it contains information which is useful for the studies that they're doing. So the idea would be that under fair learning, they'd be able to use that as well. Both I like because it seems to me to be kind of similar to right to repair. Are you familiar with right to repair at all?
Yes. Yes, of course.
Yeah. So those two things I'm a big fan of. As we've mentioned before, I'm also a fan of negative land. So this is where it gets a little crazy, right? A copywritten picture. The idea is that the AI is not using that data set to learn how to make that copywritten picture. It's using it to learn shape and learn, you know, not the composition of that picture, but the composition of all pictures. It's learning how to do art well. The concept is, and this is what they put in their thing, which is something that you've probably heard me say on here before. If you were going to compensate copyright holders for that information while they're learning that, you simply would not have those data sets. They wouldn't exist because it would be too cost prohibitive.
Right.
Even if you paid them, the people that have it, the lowest denomination that you can have in the U.S. monetary system, it would still be prohibitive for the, you know,
for the millions research institutes and stuff like millions that. Of pictures.
And so, the people that are saying, you know, to Midjourney, well, no, this isn't right. I pay $10 a month to use your service, and therefore you are making money from having this. Have a little bit of a problem. And I asked, well, here's the question. So you're still using it? I don't have a problem with the data set being used. Right? I'm in the data set. I think it's fine. I ascribe to this fair learning thing. So I'm okay. My conscience is kind of clear. Why do you still use it if you think that it's morally objectionable? To which he replied, I justify it by being a hypocrite. Which I liked. I was like, okay, yeah. That's a very human, human thing.
You know, it's being able to identify that about yourself is something that a lot of people can't do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm the same way. I believe in free labor practices. I believe in good labor practices. but I still have my Amazon Prime account. You know, right. I'm still paying into a system that I just... Oh, speaking about Amazon Prime, I got rid of Amazon Prime Music because they stopped using it the way that I like using it.
I heard they screwed it up lately.
Oh, okay, so it's not just me. I didn't like the way it was working.
There was a Reddit thread where a lot of users were complaining about the latest update to, I think specifically the Amazon Music app.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. You can shuffle stuff, but all the stuff that I downloaded, it's all right stuff. There's some change now that they did. I don't know exactly how it works.
Yeah. I'm too much of a Gen Xer. I haven't gotten into streaming music. I buy my music.
Yep. Yeah, that's I'm the same.
I keep it on my phone.
I started using the Amazon Music app because there are certain things, certain music. There was certain music that you could download and keep on the app. So that was good. And so I was doing that, and then you couldn't do it anymore, so I got rid of it.
Well, that sucks.
But yeah, I keep on telling Betty I'm going to get Wish You Were Here in the Wall, which she's on a Pink Floyd kick right now.
Cool.
I don't have those yet, though.
Let me know when she moves on to Led Zeppelin.
Oh. I've been buying Avalanches and DJ Koala and stuff from like the 2000s. Turnablism. So the other thing is, I was gonna maybe get rid of Disney Plus, but then Andor came out, and I was like, "Oh, this is really good. I can't get rid of it."
Yeah.
And then I just found out that the new Doctor Who, when it comes out, is going to be on Disney Plus.
Yeah, they have a lot of Doctor Who on HBO right now.
Yep, that's what I'm watching. I'm watching through those as quickly as I can.
I've seen the first, I think, three Jodie Whittaker episodes, and that is all I made it in. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I didn't get very far into it.
She's a dame. She's a broad. Have you seen this?
The doctor is not supposed to be a woman.
Women
can't be doctors. Well, I turned into Joseph Krebs all of a sudden.
Yes, famously misogynistic when it comes to the medical field, Joseph Krebs.
No, it was the encoding.
Joseph. Sorry. Yeah.
It was the encoding. The problem was for whatever reason it didn't transfer well. So I'm assuming it was a PAL master, a 25 frame per second master. It looked like a 60 frame per second transfer that HBO was playing, and I just could not pay attention to the story because I was so angry at how it looked.
Well, I'll have to check it out and see if it's better on my TV.
I'll have to go back
because I did some updates to the TV at Jennifer's prompting and also my own. I mean, you know,
to turn off the motion smoothing
and all that stuff because it was getting. I mean, I thought it was kind of cool. Like, there are some things from the 1980s that look, like, really interesting with the motion smoothing on. But it wasn't enough to keep it.
I've heard, cool. I haven't been able to experience this, but I've heard that motion smoothing works the best when you're watching live sports.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense to me.
But if you're not watching live sports, if you're watching, say, a Doctor Who episode from 4 years ago, turn that crap off.
Yeah, I watched Buckaroo Banzai with motion smoothing on, and it was actually kind of cool. It looked updated in a really weird way. But anyway, I turned it off then. I think actually, things that we've talked about on the podcast, if you listen back to whenever it was that I was doing it, man, there's going to be a time where you can search the audio now, but you know what I mean? Like, where you'll be able to search through all of our podcasts and find the one time that I was, like, when I was actually saying, I turned off motion smoothing, Ben, you finally got me to do it, and here's why.
Because we probably had a conversation a couple years ago where you're like, I like the motion smoothing, and I'm like, no,
we do have that conversation, I know for a fact. So the Jodie Whittaker thing. I really do think that there should have been, there's a voiceover, it's Jodie Whittaker talking, and she's like, you know, father and son get into a horrible accident, blah, 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 and they rush to the hospital, And the doctor comes in and says, I can't operate on this boy. He's my son. And and then this other guy says, how is that possible? And then it cuts to Jodie Whittaker, and you see her, and she says, because the doctor is a woman. And then it comes in.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun. I got to say, Ben, thank you so much for letting my fantasies of being the American Doctor Who come to light.
We still get people putting nasty comments on that YouTube video. People
hate it.
Oh yeah, no, they're what? Like, I think some of it is just Doctor Who fanboys hating anything fan made, but yeah. I want to say based on the tenor of some of the comments, I think maybe some people think it's real. Like, oh, the Americans are going to, like, it's a teaser for an American Doctor Who TV
show.
Wow,
that's
in which
too
case
bad.
I'm like, great, believe that.
Also, I do think that there is some kind of a this goes back to a thing I was talking about with you a long time ago. Back before the internet, there were like editors for like magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
And there were different audiences for magazines. Like if you read Mad Magazine, you weren't confused. You didn't think that it was a real magazine about something, you know, all that. Whereas with The Onion, when it got online, there was a problem, right?
Yep.
The same thing. If you bought The Onion, like the actual Onion that they were selling back when you bought it, you were holding the Onion in your hand. You're like, oh, this is... So in the same way, that American Doctor Who, the first one that we did, was based off of a conversation that we had. It was basically an inside joke with several people that we knew who would be watching it about how if there were ever an American Doctor Who, the non-violent stuff would go out the window. He wouldn't be too smart because it would put people off. And so we made a parody.
I got two hearts!
Of the thing that we were talking about. Yeah, that's too bad. I wonder, are there any likes?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to look at it.
I'll screen some of the comments for you. Although it is very hard.
Only,
if you do...
Only the good ones, Ben.
If you do...
Just like everything.
American Doctor... Oh, there it is. Okay, so it's actually one of our more popular videos. It's so far it has received almost 5,000 views.
Wow!
But here's the thing. That was 9 years ago.
Yeah, that we did that. Yeah.
That's crazy. 37 comments... There was, at one point, there was a time where I was going through all the bad comments and just replying, thanks for watching.
Yeah, I remember that. You would do that with other things of ours as well, I think.
Yeah, Dan DeLuca, do you know a Dan DeLuca?
I do not.
This is wonderful. I found it very amusing and comical. It was short, sweet, and effing zany. I love the subtleties you put in without explaining into it, such as him using a normal shovel instead of a sonic screwdriver. I'm surprised there aren't that many good American Doctor Who parodies. This seems to be an only one.
That's exactly what I like to hear.
Chris Holmes, I think you know this person.
Oh, I know Chris Holmes, yeah.
Because he says, Polio is in pretty buff shape. I wouldn't mind him as Doc Who. Can't buy me TARDIS?
Oh, my gosh. So Chris Holmes is a British man. And what the can't buy me thing is a reference to... Ben, you have to seek this out. Also, the people listening to this... It's Peter Sellers doing a dramatic reading. He's playing two characters doing a dramatic reading of Can't Buy Me Love.
Okay.
It's so...
I buy you diamond
it's so
rings.
So great. I'll buy you. I'll buy you. Money can't buy me love. Can't buy me love. Yeah, it's great.
Joel X200 says, LOL, this was funny.
Hey,
Yesakin says, Doctor Who, hey, Doctor Who, who's that guy they call the Doctor? Doctor Who, 10 out of 10 lyrics.
Nice.
Turtle Lover 97 says, "This is so bad, I love it."
See that? That still works. Yep.
So I'm guessing this is a negative quote. So somebody, and I mean the YouTube handle is Bigger on the Inside 11.
Okay.
But Bigger on the Inside 11 says, to quote Sherlock, wrong.
I think that's fine.
Thumbs up for that hairy guy who knows that cartoon giraffe, says Jonathan Thrace.
Oh, yeah. So this is somebody who knows me.
Homemade movies are what YouTube was supposed to be all about. Great job. That's kind of a dig.
Oh, no, but it's still good. It's still. I mean, for you as the videographer, it's sort of a dig, but I take it in the spirit it was given.
10 years ago. LMFAO XD. I think XD is supposed to be like an emoji, like a, you know, crying, laughing.
Yeah, like a, thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody.
And I think that was before LMFAO.
The band?
Was a band. So at one point in time, I was told that I looked like one of the guys from it.
So this person tagged a specific moment in the show where where Val says, it's bigger on the Institute. So we walk into like the accessible porta potty and she says, it's a lot bigger on the inside. And you go, yeah, it is. This person, Zachary Antle, tagged that moment in the movie and replied, no, it's not. Again, with an X and a D. Although very accurate, don't be too rough on us now. Rough is spelled R-U-F-F. I
That's a dog. Dog made the comment.
Good thing you decided to make the TARDIS a porta potty. This thing really stinks.
I like that.
So I replied and said, thanks for watching. Tell your friends how bad it is and have them watch it too.
Nice, as always been.
Marvel and DC villain fan says, what nutter, what pills is he on? I think what nutter is in reference to you.
Yeah, of course, yes.
I'm American and I think an American Doctor Who show is the dumbest idea Hollywood has thought up. That's a legit quote, verbatim, from Grey Fox 129. So I'm like, do you think
Grey
this
Fox
is 129, real?
I regret to inform you, A, there was an American Doctor Who. The Doctor was not played by an American, but it was an American-made Doctor Who. Eric Roberts is the Master, in fact, which is weird.
Said nobody in the revolution ever. Don't know what that means.
Was it a comment to a comment? Like,
nope, just straight up. That one Kansas guy said nobody in the revolution ever.
Huh.
They're on their own bandwidth.
I got wavelength. Two hearts. Said nobody in the revolution ever.
There's really no reason an American actor could not play the role, seeing as how the Doctor is an alien and not someone from Britain. A remake, though American style, would be a mistake. They could never do it justice. Even if they managed something good, it would never be good enough for some people. As for this video, was amusing for the most part, although if the point was to illustrate how an American Doctor Who would be like, then it missed the mark. Hey,
yeah.
We think this is what an American Doctor Who is going to look like. Uh-oh, somebody commented, still better than Jody. Boo.
Oh.
Another person.
No thanks.
WTF.
Good. I'll take it.
Goth Schaefer says, this is faked. There is not possible way.
True. I will say this, Ben, and this is good. This is good just for the podcast, giving a look inside of our process and all that. I think that you would agree with me that oftentimes you and I, sorry, my window shrunk and it's weird and I hate it.
It's cold
you
over
and
there.
I are, we prefer people to say, hey, good job. And we like this.
Yeah.
We don't like when people say this is bad and I hate it. We do like it when people say this is bad and I hate it and I love it. But we also love it when people are like, I don't understand what this is.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are these guys? Question mark. Why am I watching this? Question mark. All those things are fine with us.
Angelica Insomniac says, Paul, you are a special kind of weird.
Nice. And I don't know who that is, but maybe I do.
Hey, as an American, I take offense. Though as a Whovian, I agree Doctor Who belongs in the UK.
I would agree with that.
I'm American, and I agree that my country has copied too many British shows, and it sucks. So many original ideas not yet touched. Why go after the Brits? Because they have great originals, and America just wants the dollars that come with it? Sad truth.
Yes! Yes. That is exactly why.
I am British. America have copied all British TV shows. I think it is wrong. That's just one sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
I'm American, and I think that it would be wrong, very wrong, for the Americans to remake Doctor Who. It's one of my favorite shows, and it originated in England. What's British should stay British. Typical fanboy response, why not have an American remake of the show? And, somebody replied, this is terrible. I'm already bored and bored. So I replied, thanks for watching and watching. And then somebody replied to that, I think we have a humorless American. Oh, somebody called me humorless.
No, I thought they were talking about the person who said they were bored.
Yeah, somebody else said lame. And I said, thanks for watching. And those are all the 37 comments on American Doctor Who episode 1.
I told you to only read me the good ones, but I handled the bad ones just as well.
Yes, you did.
So, Ben, here's something that I've come to realize. Now, we've talked about it before, that I am how I am. I have gone through at least 3 different diagnoses in my life.
Yeah.
But here's the big thing. I figured out that I'm probably not an introvert.
Did you think you were?
I think I'm socially awkward. Well, it's just that I don't, you know, like parties. I have a hard time with them sometimes and all that. But what it is I think that I, as long as I've got something to do, then I'm okay. Right? And it's part of the reason why I would, like, make little games for myself. I think I mentioned this before, but you know the game Alphabet that they had on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Is that where they have to come up with things that start with subsequent letters of the alphabet?
Almost. They trade off whenever they talk.
Okay.
But when I would do it with other people, I would be the only one doing the game.
Did you imagine? Know you were doing a game?
Doubtful. Every once in a while, people would pick up on it.
Yeah. Okay.
For the most part, however, they couldn't tell.
Get over it.
How?
I don't know.
Sick. Yeah. Okay. So no, but I would do that back when I was in the Air Force. I would do that in, like, briefings and stuff, or whenever talking to superior officers and things.
Did you always start at A?
Yeah. Having that game made it easier for me to communicate to people, because all of a sudden I wasn't kind of on the spot. I had a thing to do.
Yeah.
So that was all right. Most of the time, though, or the other one, of course, is the thing where you have to start with the letter that they just ended on.
Right.
To tell you the truth, that one was easier because people had a harder time picking it up.
Piss off. I just go to
Forgot swears. Who I was dealing with. See,
hey now, you know who I am.
Maybe. Okay, sorry. But yeah, it's
you're
still,
not
it's
sorry.
Still you're right. Do we have anyone watching?
We do not have anyone watching. We had one person tune in for about a minute.
Yeah.
So thanks for watching during that 1 minute, rando YouTube user.
And Stephen McCandless, if you're listening, the reason I ask is anyone watching is actually not because I'm expecting there to be someone watching. It's that I'm afraid there might be someone watching. So
if they're watching today, they'll see something different. I actually put up a like a background on our image, so you're not just looking at a Zoom window. You're looking at a Zoom window. But the negative space has been removed, and there's this brown, what they call it, a grunge texture to give it some color and some flavor.
I don't know
and
what that
yes,
means, but
this was an image
like
that I just stole off of the internet.
Ben, don't do it. That's one of the things that that I found that was very interesting. So people talk about... you know, how okay, so, like, Midjourney, the copyright terms are you can use your thing that you make in any, like, you can make a t-shirt with an image that you make on Midjourney or whatever. But anyone who's using Midjourney can also use an image that you used on Midjourney to do their own things, right? If that makes sense. So yeah, it's really, yeah. I mean, the way that I describe it, it's like a, you know, you're at a community art happening, and everyone's making stuff, and everyone's making collages. I hate using collages as an example, because people already think incorrectly that you cut up things and put them together, and that's how it works. But everybody's making a collage, and... anyone can take a picture of the thing you're working on and make it into part of their collage. And, you know, it's all this big, is it Sears, Mr. Sears. His first name starts with a K.
Corby.
Like a Corby Sears kind of, hey, you know, we're doing this audio jam, but it's not an audio jam. It's a visual jam. It's like that. But the thing is that people... when asked about it, like, would you allow someone to use their thing? You're like, no, I made this. This is my deal. Which is funny.
I own it. I control it.
Which is very funny because of the way that it is set up, the way that it works. You're actually working on a tool that is made from the art of other people, right? The tool exists because it was able to study the art of other people. You could do much more, or it would behoove you to, you know, as a person, give back to the thing that you took from. I'm trying to, because it's very charged language, right? I think the people who use the generators are fine, and they're not doing anything wrong and all that. So saying take back what you took from it is wrong, but I think that you, if you are generating images in these ways, you shouldn't feel a sense of ownership over the stuff that you make to the point that you won't let anyone else use it, if that makes sense. One of the cool things that I've started doing, though, is feeding my own art into it, because you can use image source as hey, make something kind of like this.
Right.
And it's funny because I finally got it to make something. I'm gonna text it to you. I finally got it to make something where I was like, okay, if I showed this to someone, they would believe that I made this. Like, I've finally been able to make a thing that fits. It's apparently apparently been a long time. No, I was gonna say it's apparently been a long time since I texted you. Normally, you're one of the only people that I text. But this is deep into it. So, get ready. Here we go.
Saturday. I texted
you. Can you believe that I did not just simply draw this?
I'll show the people on the stream here.
Now, if you're familiar with my work, you will know that that looks a lot like what I draw.
Yeah, it's a very Paul Goody original.
Yes, but that was made by the AI based on...
Did you feed it a piece of art?
Yeah, let me show you the thing that I... This is what I fed it. The piece that I'm going to be sending you in just a moment. But now this is... Okay. I fed it this.
Oh, I got another picture from Paul Goody.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I fed it that, and then I fed it... Because I was feeding it...
Like, Rick and Morty fever dream image.
Yeah. I fed it that, and then I fed it this.
Very simple black and white line drawing.
Yep, and then it put the two things together. And you can see kind of...
Well, and they made a baby!
It pulled the red from that one part. It pulled the fuzzy thing that's floating in the sky from the little dog thing. It pulled the house from the other house. You know, so it's all... and it pulled the spiky hair from the spiky hair of the spiky hair guy. So it kind of it married the two things together. But the thing that I'll point out is that someone could type basically anything they wanted to into Midjourney, it would not have pulled up that image. Most likely. I mean, they could have tried. They could have typed in like, you know, thick red line drawing of crazy man and blue. But image prompting is the way to go, Ben, in my opinion. It's so much fun, and it's really cool.
Well,
and
I mean, not everybody has images to create more images. I mean, that's why they're creating images, because they don't have images.
Right. Oh, and I should point out also, it's made me draw more. You know, so like I drew this specifically so that I could make a Midjourney version of it. Oh, it's my little dude, my little bear guy.
Oh my god!
And of course, you know, through a couple of different iterations, it turned that into this. And again, the point being, this is not the stuff that most people are turning in.
That's your latest hot NFT.
Jesus Christ. That is something that people are running into problems with, by the way, Ben. Taking stuff that they generate on Midjourney and making NFTs out of them. And so let me explain. Person A makes something on Midjourney. Person B takes that image and makes an NFT out of it. Now,
that's
again,
person A's responsibility, not person B's.
As a person A, you know, I am not a person B. I don't do NFT things off of it. As stated before, if you find my stuff on it and you use it for things, I'm not going to get all bent out of shape. I might, you know, just as in a general like moral way, why didn't I do it or whatever, but I'm not making these things in that environment with the idea that no one else is going to see and or use them. I feel like it's the same as doing something like when the people would paint at Annex during Spin the Bottle and stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Chromomatic.
If someone in the audience took a picture of you, Ben Lawrence, and a chromomatic painting is in the background, people aren't going to freak out necessarily. that you took a picture of their art. Because the picture wasn't supposed to be of the art. The picture was of you. The art was just in the background. Kind of. Different than someone running up and taking a picture of the chromatic painting and selling that, saying, I made this painting. Different still than stealing the painting itself, right?
Right.
Yeah, but the way I think about it is this. You have already in Twitter and in TikTok those people who are famous for taking stuff that other people have done on the platform and doing their own versions of it and becoming famous even though they didn't actually make those things, right?
Yep. Sounds like people on the internet.
Yeah. So it's not a question of if this is going to happen. It will, right? People will take stuff made by other people and claim it as theirs. And there's somebody who's going to get famous and even possibly rich from prompting stuff in AI art. And there's going to be some guy who's been painting for 40 years who's, you know, living paycheck to paycheck or whatever, who's going to look at that kid who's famous for typing, again, my favorite, Peter Griffith on toilet. Or, sorry, Peter Griffith go to toilet. Do you remember that?
No.
I was making fun of, there are people who, you know, there are word filters. Like, you can't right. say bloody or blood or kill or things like that. And people are mad. They're like, my art is being stifled by this. And they'll go on rants about how these are draconian measures. And what is this? Communist China?
I can't have boobs in my art?
Well, no. See, this is the thing. Is they'll say, the female form has been used for artists by centuries. And I can't believe that, you know, if something is welcome the hallowed halls of academia, that it would be banned from your platform. And then you look through the history, because you can see everything that people search for, and it's Star Wars, Twi'lek, big chest, boobs, dancing, naked dancer, you know, or whatever. And in the same way, I was like, I believe that my art that I create on this platform is as much an art endeavor as anything that you would find in the Louvre. And then you look and you go to their history, and their history is Peter Griffith go to toilet, or whatever. That was my
Griffin.
My bad joke at the time. But then I actually found out that you can prompt on Peter Griffith go to toilet. And so there are some images that I made and showed. And they're weird, you know, because you're not saying Peter Griffin, so it doesn't give you exactly Family Guy stuff. It's very much like Superb Man Halloween stuff. If you misspell famous
dark
things,
angle.
You get some. You get stuff that's close to, but not exactly right. Yeah, pretty crazy. Dark Panther.
I've been getting, I've been kind of like caught up in the whole death of this crypto exchange called FTX. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
There's this crypto exchange called FTX, and it's this whole, it's like this 30-year-old like CEO. At one point, he was like, you know, the world's youngest billionaire, and this company Uh-oh. Was worth multiple billions, and it turns out it wasn't quite a Ponzi scheme, but it was kind of worse than that, because he wasn't like paying out other people, he was just taking money in, and you know, and then promising like a 15% annualized return on your tokens. That wasn't happening, and then was finally called out on it by a competing crypto exchange company. And lost, like, I don't even want to make up a number because I'm going to be wrong, but it's in the ballpark of, you know, multiple billions of dollars. Like, and people lost their life savings because this guy, like, told, you know, retirement funds to invest in his crypto exchange. And so you have like an entire teachers union in Maine that's out all of their pensions because the fund manager invested in this crypto. And
that is, and that is crazy. That is,
yeah. So it's kind of like I sort of have had kind of like, as far as like NFTs are concerned and cryptocurrencies and stuff, a little bit of FOMO just because like, oh, people are making money, I want to make money, you know, but I wouldn't know what I was doing. I don't really know the game. So I've stayed out of it. And now that turns out to have been the smart move.
Well, that's the other thing is that, you know, on the boards for Midjourney, people come in all the time saying, hey, anyone want to know how to turn their images into, you know, NFTs? I've got a video that I can show you and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, and you do see people kind of wide-eyed going, really? I wouldn't mind doing that. How much do you make? Well, you can make as much as blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, part of it is the fact that I there's a divide between me and some people on the forums because this is actually really interesting. I know that we're a little bit over time, but I just want to say it's very similar to the Annex Theater thing about getting stipends, right? So when you're in a show in Annex, you can get a stipend or drink ticket or whatever. You know, you don't get paid. You're a volunteer, but they do also kick something your way as like a thank you. Like, yes. You know, it's not a paycheck. It's a thing that you get. And every once in a while, there's an argument that's like, well, the theater should pay people. And the answer is always, well, the theater can't pay people. It's not a money-making venture. And not so much just because it's a nonprofit, but also because, I mean, you break even or lose money on shows most of the time.
Well, I think in Steven's tenure, and Steven, you can text us and let us know if there has, in Steven's like almost 20 years as managing director, I bet the number of shows that have broke even, if you don't take into account rent on the space,
and fundraising,
probably five or less, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the big thing. And so in the same way, people are like, well, you know, I think artists should get paid. And so if you're in this data set, you should get money. And I'm always like, I don't think artists should get paid for being training data. It's not enough money for there to be training data if they were going to pay you. But I do think that artists should not have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. But that's the thing is you have to decouple those two problems. The problem of artists not getting enough food isn't that artists aren't getting paid by fringe theater companies. That's not where the problem lies. And that's a problem that a lot of people don't see, right? Your art does matter, but your art doesn't necessarily have to matter so much that you get healthcare. You should get healthcare. And your art should matter, but those two things don't need to be coupled together.
We don't live in a society where your artistic merit is a right. I'd like to apologize to our affiliates down the line. We're running long tonight, but yeah, it's not a fringe theater problem. It's a society problem that you can't pay rent because you can't sell your art.
Yeah. I feel as though, and you know, call me crazy, but as things are automated, you know, as work for humans becomes less, the person who owns the machines that are now doing the work isn't the person who should get all the money. It's the people who allowed the person who owns the machines to get to the point where they own these machines. What I'm saying is that if we take money out of the equation and you just look at goods, resources, things like that, you have the ability to make sure that people are healthy, safe, and happy. Right? You don't, I'm not talking about, you know, how much money they get in the bank or whatever. Happy, yes. drugs, Ben. We give everybody
happy drugs.
No. But the reason I throw happy in there, right? Healthy, safe, and happy is that many times when it comes to getting people, assistance for things, they're okay as long as they're eating dry oatmeal and, you know, living in a place without its own toilet. But as soon as they start getting luxury items or whatever, then take that away. They're living too high on the hog. I can't believe that. That's why I throw happy in there. People should also be happy. There should be, and I'm not saying that you I don't know how to say it, but basically, so like if you're an artist, right? You should have the materials to make your art. That should be a thing that you get to have. Does everybody get a plasma TV? No. Right?
But I'm a graphic artist. Do I deserve a free computer and tablet from the government?
Oh, who says the government's going to be doing it? That's the other thing.
Who else would do it?
Well, this is the thing, and again, since we're talking, as long as we're talking crazy, the companies themselves, I feel as though, like if you look at the LeClaire, neighborhood, that was established by N.O. Nelson, in Illinois, you can look it up. I happen to live near where it was. There was a time when people who had companies cared about people, and like they had free education stuff, and you had a place where they would let you live. And sure, there's the company store idea that's bad, but there's also planned communities that were kind of good back when CEOs made a fraction of what they make now.
That's why I'm a company man.
I'm just saying a company can do it. There's no reason why they can't. And I think the first company, if there were companies that would do this sort of thing, people would flock to them. They'd leave the old competition behind. And
so you're talking about a for-profit commune.
I'm talking about a for-profit, not necessarily even a commune, but a for-profit
cult then.
No, a for-profit business with incentive programs for employees that rival things that the government currently does. So, like, for example, let's say...
fixing potholes.
You have unemployment insurance right now from the state government, right? Federal government has some too, but for Washington, it's basically the state government. The same sort of thing. You work for me, you work for my company, right? After a certain point of time, you get vacation hours, but you also get layoff hours. If we have to lay you off for 3 months or whatever, you're still an employee of our company, but we're paying you your salary.
You're laid off though.
No, you're
Oh, and then you got to move out of company town because you're time is expired.
No. This is the thing, Ben. And this is how it gets dark too. This is how it goes bad, because everything goes bad eventually. When
this podcast,
you get laid off, and you get kicked out of your apartment, that's when you move to company town. You move to company town, and you get your basic HelloFresh box, and you get your little apartment in company town.
You start and from ground zero.
They look for a job for you at your old wage. And if they can't find a job for you at your old wage, well, heck, yeah, there's always got to be people sweeping the floors and things like that.
Put you in the blender and you are in tomorrow's HelloFresh box.
Yeah, exactly. In the end, Ben. In the end. When there's nothing else to be done.
Speaking of the end, Paul, I think we've overstayed our welcome here.
Yeah, sorry, everybody. Sorry for the affiliates down the line, as Ben says.
Would have gotten out of it earlier, but we were too busy creating a utopia.
Yes, it's one man's utopia is another man's dystopia. The first man is me, the second man is Paul. And Ben, I'm just two people right now, and you're watching me decompensate. Anyone else smell burning rubber? Right. Is that a thing that's happening?
Burning rubber is a sound that is a smell that was made when people tuned in and then tuned back out of our show.
Hey. All right. So, Ben, as always, great talking to you. Keep it wrong. And I will talk to you more later.
Talk to you next week.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
And we're clear.